Acclaimed Israeli cellist Amit Peled is an astounding performer and also a professor at Baltimore's Peabody Institute. His students perform in a group with him that is known as the Cello Gang, and they recently released their first album on CTM Classics. I sat down with Amit to discuss his career and the development of the gang. It's intriguing to know that he started life as a basketball player, so I asked him how he ended up on stage with a cello.
As you can imagine, I'm asked that question a lot, and especially when people see me these days, because I'm 6'5". And if I would be 6'5" when I made the decision to stay with a cello, I wouldn't be a cellist today. I would be a basketball player, but I was not 6'5". Anyway, I started to play basketball much, much before I started playing cello, and cello came along later. I started cello when I was 10. And after a few years of doing both, apparently I was quite good at cello, but I guess even better at basketball. And my cello teacher told me that I really have to make a decision, because I cannot do that anymore. Practice cello for 4 hours a day and then have training every day and a game once a week and then concerts. It's not possible. I did do that for a while, but it was just too much. So I remember sitting in a room in my parents' house in the kibbutz where I grew up, and just doing the pros and cons, you know, what should I do? And I was not tall enough. So I said, you know, there's no way anyway that I'll make it, because I'm not tall. So let's stick to the cello. And then, of course, I grew to be 6'5". So I don't know if I made the right decision. No, just kidding. Of course I did. I always tell my students, especially now, actually my son, who is really big in basketball, I tell him, you know, if I would make it as a basketball player, I would probably be a very good player in the Israeli league, but I will never make it to the NBA. But at the cello, at least it's a much longer career, much less money. But I did make it to Johns Hopkins University. So, you know, it's pretty good.
Can you tell us the background on how you ended up coming to the United States and teaching at Peabody?
Well, at the United States, after serving in the Israeli army, I was in the army string quartet. I didn't have to fight, but I did serve my country, which I'm very proud of. I came here to this country to study at Yale University. I had a full scholarship there, and then I went to New England Conservatory. Then I went back to Europe and did my graduate studies there in Europe. And in 2001, I had my Carnegie Hall debut as a cellist. And just as a preparation, the America-Israel Culture Foundation arranged for me to come to the States and to do some small run-through concerts, as we call them. One of them was in Baltimore. There was a lady who lived here and who gave a lot of money to the America-Israel Foundation. And she was able to host me and my pianist just as a run-through. So I played the concert in her house. I was very thankful. And at the reception, I started talking to somebody who apparently was the dean of the Peabody Conservatory of the Johns Hopkins University. Now, I was, of course, in my 20s, and one of her questions was, do you like teaching? And I said, with my Israeli chutzpah, I said immediately, like, oh, sure, I love teaching. And I, of course, never taught in my life. And she said, well, then if you wouldn't mind, you could come the next day, tomorrow morning, and give a masterclass at Peabody. And I said, sure. I mean, the only thing is that I need to change my plane ticket. If you're willing to do that, again, with my chutzpah, I didn't realize who I'm talking to, but I would love to do it. So I didn't even have a chance to get nervous. I just woke up in the next morning and I went to Peabody, gave a small recital, and taught a few students. And those students were practically my age back then. Yeah, that was it. And I felt really good. And I remember calling my wife, who was my girlfriend back then, back in Germany. And I said, you know, I don't know how to explain this feeling, but you know, sometimes when you do auditions, or you just feel that you nail it, that everything worked well, the energy is good, the place loves you, you love the place. And I told her, you know, I think they're going to hire me. And she said, well, calm down. Just come back home. You know, just let's take it easy. So I flew back to Germany. And she came to pick me up in Frankfurt, and then we went to her parents' house in next to Stuttgart. And the next day, I got an email from Peabody that they anonymously hired me. They offered me the job. So we were like with two suitcases and a cello. We looked at each other, and we moved to Baltimore. And I started my life as a professor here. That was 15 years ago.
Like many musicians, your teachers played such an important role in your development. Now that you're on the other side of things, how does the teacher-student relationship remain so important to you today?
Well, I think, you know, looking back, it starts with the way I grew up. And I think for all of us, what we do as adults, it goes back to what we were as children. You know, I either try to go away from what we were, or we want to assimilate. So I grew up in a social community, in a kibbutz. And everything was equal, but education was a really important part of that kind of life. And all kids were equal, and we shared everything. And I think now as an adult and as an educator, I want to give my kids, but also my students, that feeling of sharing and feeling of a big family. That when you study with your teacher, it's not that you just have to come once a week and have your lesson and be scared of your teacher. Studying with a teacher, or I would say a mentor, and that's something that relates also to my main teachers, is to be with somebody for a few years and to really observe them completely as a human. So, you know, I used to go to Stop and Shop with my teacher back in with Bernard Greenhouse when I lived in Cape Cod with him. And he would teach me how to choose tomatoes, how to smell it, and how to cook it later on, and how to make tomato sauce for your pasta. That was for me a great cello lesson, because I realized that Bernard Greenhouse was a complete artist, not just with the cello, but with the way he chews tomatoes, with the way he smells his coffee, with the way he drinks his martini every afternoon. So that was for me the whole package. So with my students, you know, it will be sort of lying to them and to myself if I only would teach them a Brahms sonata once a week and then goodbye. So, for instance, they have in their schedule, they have my entire performing schedule. They know where I am around the world in any given second, what I'm playing. So when I come to Peabody, like yesterday, I just took a red eye from Seattle and I arrived exactly to the lesson. And if I'm there awake, ready to teach them and give my heart and soul, they better be prepared. And it works. I mean, they appreciate it much more. And another part of it is to be on stage with me. I think that a teacher is not just somebody who teaches them what to do and hopes that they will do it one day when they leave school. A teacher is somebody that is really engaged with them as a performer. I don't believe in teaching them and not being able to do it myself. Whatever I tell them to do, I better be able to do myself, which is not easy sometimes because some of them are really phenomenal. So that keeps me on my toes and I do have to practice. But being on stage with them created a whole different dimension of a student-professor relationship and of music making. I have to say, you know, I'm very active as a performer. I have a regular piano trio and I play with orchestras and so on. And I have a lot of colleagues from different places in the world and it's wonderful to play with them. But when you create a magical moment on stage with one of your students who came so fresh to study with you and didn't understand what it means to take time in music, didn't understand what it means to exaggerate your emotion on stage, didn't understand what it means to pinpoint and to verbally say what is the emotion you're trying to convey here, all of a sudden, not only to be able to say it and to feel it, to create it with them and to have an old lady in the first row crying because you just did it. That's a whole different dimension of sharing emotion with the public. So I feel fortunate to do it with them. It's not, you know, just posting on social media now a photo of me being here in the studio, but a photo of me holding the CD with them. And I tagged some of the students that are on this CD and I just said, I'm so proud of you, like 10 exclamation marks. Because I am. I'm thinking about them now and the process we've done, the journey to make this CD and to make this Peabody Pellet Cello Gang what it is today. Really, I'm so proud. I mean, they're an integral part of it. It's not just my creation.
What's the history on how this came together?
Well, it came together because of my need to share with them the stage. I don't have to tell you, everybody knows how difficult it is, this music world, this ever-growing competitive music world, where once you leave the greenhouse of your school where you have to perform in that hall or with that ensemble and you kind of have to do it for your degree, all of a sudden you are thrown, that's the word I can use, you're thrown to the real world and nobody needs you there. Nobody needs you there. There's too much going on in the music world. So you have to be creative in order to find your own possibilities. I thought, you know, I've played in this country in so many places. Why don't I help my own students? Why do other people, you know, play elsewhere, and I hear them and they're not better than my students? Why can't I have them with me on stage? So it was a little bit hard in the beginning to convince some presenters that students are worthwhile being in those situations where you get paid and you play in those important series. So I made some videos with my students. I took time to do that. And once the presenters saw it, they immediately engaged us as a cello gang. And they were shocked to see the level, that the level is not only Juilliard or Curtis, but Peabody actually have those amazing cellists walking around Baltimore and creating this amazing music. So one reason to create this gang is to basically give those excellent, not all of the students, but those best ones, to give them the opportunity to be on stage before they embark on their own career. The second was educational, for them to have the opportunity to make music with their teacher. I remember playing with Bernard Greenhouse, with Lawrence Lesser, with Boris Pergamechik, with my three big mentors. To have this rare, it was rare because I did once with each one of them, but to have that opportunity to play with them was the biggest lesson I've had ever. And if I think as a student going to festivals, the most memorable festival for me was Marlborough Festival in Vermont, where the teachers are not called teachers, they're called senior members. And the students are not students, they're junior members. And we all play in one group. So I ended up playing Schubert two cello quintet with David Sawyer, the founding cellist of the Guarneri Quartet. I grew up listening to David Sawyer. He was my hero. And all of a sudden, I sit next to him and play Schubert quintet. There was never any better lesson for me as a cellist because I sat next to one of my heroes. It's like you play basketball one evening outside in the street with Michael Jordan. I mean, come on. Just to do that, I mean, the closest I get to see those basketball players is to sit courtside. I cannot play with them. Imagine playing with Kyrie Irving now, who's doing so well in Boston Celtics. Imagine him playing with you. Of course, he's much better, but he's going to spend the whole evening with you on the court playing with you. That's like a dream come true. So that's what I'm trying to do for them.
And what kind of repertoire do you look to perform with the cello gang? I know there's a lot of repertoire already out there for cello ensemble, but do you find that you're looking to have new arrangements done for the group?
Well, there's a lot of repertoire. So we don't have a shortage of cello ensemble pieces. However, again, as an educator, I there are some pieces that I think the public should hear and they're not arranged yet or haven't been, like the Schubert. And I would like to do so. Then I just do it myself. And through the gang, we're hoping, and through this CD, we're hoping to put it out there to the world. First and foremost for cellists, so they can play it. But then also for the public to hear a piece of music that they know very well, like the arpeggione, but from totally different angle. And so that's it's easier for me to do in the cello gang because it's sort of, it's not democracy. I mean, I make the decision and I can decide who is playing and what we're playing. They can just say, yes, thank you for the opportunity and play. So that's why I don't have to argue with colleagues about what we're going to play. I can make a decision and it makes it easier in the process. Of course, on stage, they have their own ability to do whatever they want musically, but the repertoire is something that I think about carefully. So, for instance, the program that we're doing these days, it's called Around the World in Seven Cellos. And the point of this program is to start a journey that starts here in Baltimore, where Star Spangled Banner was written. And we start with it. And we just go around the world with the members of the gang. So in any given concert, it could be Israel, which is where I'm from, and then it could be Canada, Croatia, Havana, Cuba, Australia, of course, America. So we have this resource of people and we play pieces from each country, from each musician's country, and they feel a sense of pride and we feel a sense of sharing with the public those kind of pieces. So if that piece, if there is a piece from that country that is already arranged for cello ensemble, great. If not, we will arrange it ourselves, and that's what we do now.
We then discuss the planning of the repertoire for this album, which opens with the Schubert Arpeggione Sonata that Amit previously referred to.
The first piece on the CD, the Schubert Arpeggione, was probably the most important piece for me to record personally as a cellist at this stage of my life. It's a piece that is considered to be the most difficult technically piece for cello. And I really wanted to record it as a cellist, especially with the cello of Pablo Casals, which has a lot of correlation to this piece. And then I wanted, if I do this sort of monumental recording in my journey, I wanted to have my students on that record, on that piece. And I always thought that it will sound really great as a string quartet of cellos. So that's the first piece. And I think it's something that we, as a cello gang, wanted to contribute to the world of music. Just a new arrangement, a premiere of something that can be handy for a lot of cellists to play, and actually also violists. They could do it on four violas. And then sort of the diamond in between the two pieces outside is a Popper Requiem. And Popper was the greatest cellist of the 19th century. So the first piece is sort of homage to the cello of Casals and to the hardest piece written for cello. The second piece is a homage to and a thankfulness for the greatest cellist of the 19th century who wrote so much for cello. And this Requiem is one of the most beautiful pieces for cello ensemble. It's written for three cellos and piano. We played it. It's a live recording which we recorded as an encore of my one of my Peabody recitals. And on that recording, at that time, I had 18 students in my class, and it's 19 cellists on stage with piano. And it creates such a monumental sound, such a like a dark chocolate sound, I can call it, that I really wanted that to be in the middle of the CD, sort of like a sandwich, like the ham in between the two pieces of bread. So that's the Popper. Then this last piece of the CD is a Handel sonata, where I wanted to feature, you know, from all those, I've been in Peabody for 50 years and I've had the pleasure of and luck of working with really amazing talents. But Andrea Casarubius, who is featured on that Handel sonata, is one of the best students I've ever had. She just finished her residency at the Carnegie Hall Ensemble. And she's really now a colleague of mine. She's a friend, she's a colleague. And we played that piece and recorded it as two colleagues, two musicians. I felt from the first second where she came to record it with me, this was when she was done studying with me, I felt that she is ready. I was so proud to hear and to see how she is on stage and how she reacts in the recording, that I felt that she is really a colleague, and she's a cellist that I admire as a cellist. And I wanted to end the CD with sort of a message to the future for my students that, you know, when you go through the process, you work hard and you become a performer, at the end of the tunnel, you are by yourself. You are a performer and you become a colleague. You're not anymore under me or my student, or I decide what your next step is. You are my colleague. And if we like each other, we can play together. If not, we don't have to. But we are equal colleagues. And that's the message of the Handel Sonata.